Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24-7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Nicholas Harris, who's a fellow at the Center for a New American Security, working in the Middle East Security Program. From 2016 to 2017, Nicholas served as the Andrew Basevich USA Fellow at the Center for New American Security. He's also a senior analyst at the Jamestown Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based global research and analysis institute, and he's the author of From the Bottom Up, A Strategy for U.S. Military Support for Syria's Armed Opposition. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nicholas Harris.
Thank you for having me.
And President Trump is, I think, basically taunting the Russians. The Russian defense minister warned that the Russians would respond to American missiles and go after the missiles and their carriers, which could mean the destroyers off in the Mediterranean firing the cruise missiles, if that's a part of what is in the planned attack, which I imagine is looming at any moment. Today, the president tweeted out, Russia vows to shoot down any and all missiles fired at Syria. Get ready, Russia, because they will be coming, nice and new and smart. You shouldn't be partners with a gas-killing animal who kills his people and enjoys it. So that's pretty rough language, certainly undiplomatic. Not that I entirely disagree with the last part about Assad, frankly, but not what you normally hear. And this is a tense situation. So to your mind, is Donald Trump pouring oil on the fire here?
President Trump is taking this situation personally. He's taken the Duma attack that happened over the weekend personally. President Trump is a man who learns visually. And the images that came out of Duma over the weekend resembled images that came from Han Shehun a year ago, which prompted President Trump to order cruise missile strikes on the Syrian military base at al-Shayrat. There is a sort of history here, Ian, and it's a recent history. For the last month, President Trump, who has a very close relationship with U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, has essentially been asking Ambassador Haley to put Russia on notice in the United Nations Security Council regarding the situation in the East Ghouta near Damascus, in particular in the context of allowing humanitarian access for civilians. Russia could not move Assad, really, by and large, to accomplish that. And, this has been a simmering issue. And I think, the real spark were the images that came out this weekend. And I think what you see from the way President Trump has executed his messaging is that, he is personally offended by Vladimir Putin. And he's personally offended that the Russian generals on the ground in Syria can't manage Assad and Assad's forces. And you get the sense that not only is this a personal, he's taking this personally, but he is now in a pattern where he's trying to show Bashar al-Assad, but also Vladimir Putin, who's boss.
And again, I'm speaking with Nicholas Harris, who's a fellow at the Center for a New American Security, working in the Middle East Security Program. From 2016 to 2017, Nicholas served as the Andrew Basevich USA Fellow at the Center for New American Security. He's also a senior analyst at the Jamestown Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based global research and analysis institute, and he's the author of From the Bottom Up, A Strategy for U.S. Military Support for Syria's Armed Opposition. Well, but he's also violating something that he's often said, which you should never tip your hand, and everything's on the table, but we won't say what we're going to do. Well, he's more or less saying what we're going to do by implication that this is going to be a bigger attack than the one a year ago, and I don't see how he can back down and do something similar to the 59 cruise missiles that attacked the Syrian airbase and obviously didn't deter the future behavior of Bashar al-Assad.
It didn't. And it's interesting that you bring this up, Ian, because, and Bashar al-Assad is still in power because he is a clever leader, and he's very cleverly played every advantage he's had, whether it's been military, demographic, or in terms of great power support to stay in power. And what Bashar al-Assad took from the strikes last year, what the Russians probably told him, because the Russians talked to the Americans every day, is that there is a threshold, and the Americans have decided that, you know, chemical weapon use lower than nerve agents won't merit a U.S. response, because institutionally, the U.S. military does not want to be the policeman of Syrian conflict. They don't want to launch strikes every time Assad does something heinous. And I know that sounds so cold-blooded, but it's true. There's an institutional awareness within the U.S. military that U.S. resources for Syria are limited. Fundamentally, the U.S. wants to focus on eastern Syria and the counter-ISIS campaign. It doesn't want to have to be involved so much in the western Syria and the active civil war there between Bashar al-Assad and his allies and the armed opposition. And that, and from a strategic perspective, President Trump himself and his senior leaders want to shift attention to Asia and to the Korean Peninsula, where the Trump administration assesses that the gravest and most imminent threat to the U.S. homeland, perhaps an existential threat, emanates from. And so this is where we're in this, we're very interested in time right now, because, you know, Ian, I look at President Trump's his messaging, and I also look at sort of the senior military leadership and Secretary of Defense Mattis, and it seems that President Trump has his message in, but his senior defense and military leaders are walking in step with him. You don't see the same type of leaks coming out of the Pentagon or the National Security Council saying that there's this major dissent against what President Trump is doing. And I do wonder if just broadly the U.S. government's tired by Assad's antics and view this as an opportunity to try to get Russia to not only rein Assad in, but to get serious about, okay, how do you work pragmatically forward to get to a solution to the Syrian conflict?
Well, I think early in the war, during the Obama administration, I think it was the former French president, Sarkozy, and the Saudis were prepared to launch attacks against all of Assad's palaces, and they wanted the U.S. to give them air cover and suppress the ground-to-air missiles, and apparently Obama did not agree to that. If there is to be a symbolic attack on all of Assad's palaces, etc., or something like that, surely it's not going to be that easy unless they use cruise missiles, because the Israelis just attacked some Iranian IRGC, a drone activity on an air base, and they lost one of their jets. They didn't lose the pilot. If they did lose the pilot and he'd been captured, I'm sure we'd be already in a much more combative situation. But that would indicate to me that these Russian ground-to-air missile batteries are pretty effective.
Well, Russia has advanced anti-air missile systems that it has in western Syria, and they're there to, you know, not only protect Russia's air base at Hammamim in Latakia province, and also Russia's naval base in Tartus, but also to protect the core area of Bashar al-Assad's power, which is central western Syria. It's interesting because, you know, this is a great point you raise, Ian, because, you know, the Israelis pretty consistently over the last few years have been able to conduct airstrikes against targets that they believe to be supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon, primarily targets that are Iranian or Hezbollah targets in western Syria. And there is some question to the extent to which it's possible that the Russians who maybe operate in these air defense systems have sort of dropped the shield in order to send a signal to the Iranians that their agenda and Russia's agenda are not the same in Syria. In this case, I think, you know, what we'll have to look for is, you know, what happens with this coalition of the willing that seems that President Trump and his team are trying to assemble. You know, you have President Macron from France, who is there, you know, right alongside President Trump. It looks as if British Prime Minister Theresa May might actually have political capital to use to get the United Kingdom involved. You've seen Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Australia, some other partners, discussing that they would that they'd be willing to support the United States. And this is an important point because in order to carry out what they, what is referred to as saturation strikes, which means, you know, not just cruise missiles but also aircraft, because the cruise missiles and some aircraft are needed to take out air defenses, and then aircraft and other cruise missiles come in to hit the targets. And in order to do those types of strikes, you need more time, you need more resources. And one way to get more resources into the Middle East without having to shift major U.S. forces that would otherwise be focused on North Korea is to create a coalition of the willing. I think that's the most important factor here, is that if there is a military strike that's ordered by President Trump, it will be conducted as part of a multinational coalition of the willing.
Well, that appears to be what's happening now, that they're gathering this coalition of the willing. So that would mean that nothing's going to happen for a few days. Would that be your analysis?
I think it's likely that we're going to be in a hold-in pattern, and the reason for that is, yes, you need to assemble this coalition, the willing. I also believe that there is a sort of very robust back channel that's going on between the United States and Russia about the way forward, and that, you know, the United States is not necessarily fully committed to a military option, but they're going to give time for Russia to demonstrate that it's gotten the message, because it's about Russia. This is less about Assad. This is about Russia. And so I think that this is an important, I think this is an important point, that, you know, if there is a military strikes that are conducted, they will not only impact Assad, but they're meant to have Russia feel pain as well.
But I don't see, and we talked about this earlier, Nick, I don't see how Trump can back down from his rhetoric. He basically has always prefaced it by saying Obama was weak and he drew a red line and then he caved. I'm not going to do that. And his tweets today are even more inflammatory, basically taunting the Russians. So it'd be hard for me to see how he could basically back down unless there was some big deal. But remember, the big deal that Obama made with the Russians over getting rid of the chemical weapons, well, look how good that one was.
Well, and, you know, you only get the Russians to feel the pain if they have to support the weight of Assad. And, you know, in order to accomplish that mission, you have to significantly degrade what remains of Assad's military resources, which means at the bare minimum, you hit most all of his air bases in central western Syria. You hit potential or known chemical weapons factories. You might also hit Assad family economic resources. You might hit, you know, known sites where they draw income from in order to also, you know, put some pain on Assad. And, you know, this is why, you know, the situation right now is very dynamic. And, you know, from the big picture, this will only work successfully for the United States if Assad's war machine is ground down, or it creates the conditions whereby Russia would consider an alternate to Assad.
Well, Nicholas Harris, I thank you for your analysis, and I thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Nicholas Harris, who's a fellow at the Center for a New American Security, working in the Middle East Security Program. From 2016 to 2017, Nicholas served as the Andrew Bacevich USA Fellow at the Center for New American Security. He's also a senior analyst at the Jamestown Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based global research and analysis institute, and he's the author of From the Bottom Up, A Strategy for U.S. Military Support for Syria's Armed Opposition. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the grilling today of Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg before the House Energy and Commerce Committee.